Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Lori Fatchett McGee, and it is my privilege to serve as worship associate for today's service. I'm joined today by worship leader Elaine Bowen and our guest musician Vanessa Vesley, who is playing the piano so lovely today. We are delighted to welcome you to this religious community.
Our call to worship comes from the author Anne Lamott from her new book. I am not sure I even recognize the ever-presence of mercy anymore, the divine and the human. The messy, crippled, transforming, heartbreaking, lovely, devastating presence of mercy. But I have come to believe that I am starving to death for it, and my world is too. Come, let us explore mercy. Come, let us worship together.
We light our chalice this morning with these words from the book of Micah in the Old Testament. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow down before the exalted God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams and 10,000 with 10,000 rivers of olive oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God.
Thank you.
the religious education class that is taking place this morning, our children will be traveling to Mexico. So let us now sing them on their safe journey to that wonderful land. The words to the song are printed in your order of service.
Our music director, Hal Walker, offers loving thanks to the members of the UU Choir, the UU Church of Kent Care Team, Creative Cuisine, Bill, and yours truly, who played such an important role in the Reverend Harold Walker's celebration of life service yesterday at the Presbyterian Church. It was a beautiful event, and if you were not there in presence, we felt you there in spirit. He was well loved, well respected, and a beautiful human being. Please join me now in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and love, we are grateful for this day. We are grateful for the beauty of the earth, for the sun and the air, for the water, for the clouds, for everything that surrounds us. For we know that tempered by this beauty, there have been losses this week, losses which have touched us deeply and personally. This service is offered in remembrance not only of the Reverend Harold Walker Jr., but also a longtime member of this congregation, Joanne Nussbaum. We thank you for their presence in our life and the way they have touched us. Let us always remember life is fragile. It is as fragile as it is beautiful. Remember this day to reach across divides and touch the hands and the hearts, for we are all one family under the sky, under God, as you may perceive it to be. We are all one family. We hurt together, we grieve together, we celebrate together. We love together. Take this in your heart today and reach out and touch part of the world that hurts, that you may heal with your love, with our love. Amen. Blessed be. Our first reading today is from William Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice. And it is a passage from Act 4, Scene 1. And it is subtitled The Quality of Mercy. The scene is set in a Venetian court of justice. And Portia, who is disguised as the young lawyer Balthazar, begs Shylock for mercy. The quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. It blesseth him that gives and him that takes. 'Tis mightiest in the mightiest. It becomes the throned monarch better than his crown. His scepter shows the force of temporal power, the attribute to awe and majesty, wherein doth sit the dread and fear of kings. But mercy is above this sceptered sway. It is enthroned in the heart of kings. It is an attribute to God himself. And earthly power doth then show like God when mercy seasons justice. Therefore, Jew, though justice be thy plea, consider this, that in the course of justice, none of us should see salvation. We do pray for mercy, and that same prayer doth teach us all to render the deeds of mercy.
Our next reading was originally a song. And as I read the words, you may recognize the song as the one you've heard before. Mercy Now. My father could use a little mercy now. The fruits of his labor fall and rot slowly on the ground. His work is almost over. It won't be long, and he won't be around. I love my father, and he could use some mercy now. My brother could use a little mercy now. He's a stranger to freedom. He's shackled to his fears and doubts. The pain that he lives in is almost more than living will allow. I love my brother, and he could use some mercy now. My church and my country could use a little mercy now, as they sink into a poisoned pit that's going to take forever to climb out. They carry the weight of the faithful who follow them down. I love my church and country, and they could use some mercy now. Every living thing could use a little mercy now. Only the hand of grace can end the race towards another mushroom cloud. People in power, well, they'll do anything to keep their crown. I love life, and life itself could use a little mercy now. Yeah, we could all use a little mercy now. I know we don't deserve it, but we need it anyhow. We hang in the balance, dangle between hell and hallowed ground. Every single one of us could use some mercy now. Every single one of us could use some mercy now.
It was the spring of 2001, about a month after I turned 40 years old. I began coming to this church on Easter Sunday, April 12th. I remember it distinctly. I was coming from a place of benign neglect of my spirituality. In fact, since my late teens and into my late 20s and early 30s, I had been a rather militant agnostic. It took that change in life to make me realize I was missing something. But yet, when I came here and felt the love in this sanctuary, I remained uncomfortable with God talk and all kinds of religious language. In fact, I was one of those persons in the pews who, when we would come to the word God in a song, I would stop singing until it passed and then start singing again. You may have done that yourself at some time. I decided that this wasn't a very mature way to handle my discomfort, so I took the class called Building Your Own Theology. It was a 10-part series, and it helped me define my faith beliefs. It also helped me develop a relative peace with God language. I started receiving the Unitarian Universalist Association publication, The UU World. And at the time, the association president was the Reverend William Sinkford. He offered a sermon in Fort Worth, Texas in late 2002. And at that service, he exhorted Unitarian Universalists to make peace with language of reverence so that we are able to speak in similar terms with those of other faith traditions, and that rather from shrinking from using words or bypassing them or ignoring them completely, that we need to embrace them. We need to define language of reverence through our UU lens. It was a controversial sermon. He got a lot of flack from it. People thought, erroneously, that he meant putting the actual word God into our principles. And that's not really what he meant at all. That article in the UU World about this controversy really got me thinking and exploring. Our former minister, the Reverend Melissa Carvel-Zeemer, offered a number of adult religious exploration classes, and through conversation with her, I began to define what I believe words such as soul, blessing, grace, covenant mean. And for some Unitarian Universalists, those are still slightly squirmy words, but nothing quite like things like sacrament, resurrection, and salvation. I attended the UU General Assembly, that is our annual meeting for 1 week. And I was at the one in Louisville, Kentucky, a number of years ago. And for folks who know me, I can't pass up a bookstore. So there was a large bookstore in the exhibition hall. And I ran across this little gem of a book. It is called Fluent in Faith, A Unitarian Universalist Embrace of Religious Language. Yes! I grabbed it and held on to it for dear life, and I also bought a number of copies for other friends who were serving with me in leadership at the time. In this little book, it continues the conversation begun by Reverend Singford and includes a foreword written by him. The author, Jean Harrison Nyahar, offers 15 words of faith that are discussed in this book. They include things like God, faith, hope, doctrine, prayer, which for some people is still a little squirmy, sin, atonement, and so forth. She says in the chapter on mercy that she believes it seems to have fallen furthest from our usage, that it is a bit old-fashioned, quaint, and sentimental. You may not have considered mercy in a very long time, if at all. But when looking for definitions, there is one that I found that said, it is kindness in excess of that which might be expected or demanded by fairness. That didn't quite hit the mark for me. From the Judaic tradition, the Hebrew word most often translated to mercy is hesed, H-E-S-E-D. Or loving kindness, or overflowing love. What Nyahar says in her book is, what a gentle human quality this suggests, something more than simple kindness, but loving kindness. Kindness might mean an action. This is more than an act. It is an action flowing forth from a deep feeling. And I add, perhaps that flows forth from what we might understand as soul or spirit. In her newly released book, Hallelujah Anyway, Rediscovering Mercy, Anne Lamott shares her thoughts on what mercy means. Maybe it would be helpful to ask what we mean when we speak or dream of mercy. Mercy is radical kindness. Mercy means offering or being offered aid in desperate straits. Mercy is not deserved. It involves absolving the unabsolvable, forgiving the unforgivable. Mercy brings us to the miracle of apology, given and accepted, to unashamed humility when we have erred or forgotten. So now we have three definitions of mercy through other eyes. But how do you, how do we define mercy? Shakespeare, through the character of Portia, tells us that the quality of mercy is twice blessed. Blesses him who gives and he who receives. Two sides of the loving kindness coin. One must be able and willing to both give and receive mercy. I speak from my personal experience that it has always been easier and much more comfortable to give than to receive mercy. There are those all too messy human feelings of unworthiness that the other is more deserving than the self. Perhaps you know what I mean. You may have had an experience. I recall a number of years ago when I broke my leg in the wintertime. It was just as I had assumed my first term as the moderator of our board of trustees here. It was the end of January and through February that I was on crutches. I remember trying to balance a backpack, get through a door, people offering help, me declining in a rather embarrassed way. No, I've got it. I'm okay. I can do this. I declined offers of mercy. Was it self-reliance, determination, stubbornness? What is it about our nature that makes it difficult to be the recipient of mercy, this freely given loving kindness and overflowing love? And to this question, I have no great wisdom to offer, but I know this, that opening one's heart to tender mercy defines grace. If you believe, as Lamont says in our opening call to worship, that she is starving to death for mercy and the world is too, and Gaucher sings that every single one of us could use some mercy now, where do we start? First, you must begin with yourself. Be merciful to yourself. Stop the self-shaming. I'm not smart enough. I'm too fat. My nose is too big. I don't have enough money. Love yourself for who you are. Warts and all. We all have them. None of us is perfection. Loving yourself is not conceit or egotism. It is being self-full and acknowledging your own worth and dignity. Be kind and loving to yourself. Then you are able to go forth and play it forward. Be open to opportunities to share mercy. Linda Ross Meyer, a law professor at Quinnipiac University School of Law, offers how we can help make our world more just by offering our own racial and social standings privilege of micro mercies to others by starting with some very simple acts. Make eye contact. Smile. Say hello to strangers. Be polite. Listen actively. Before rushing to judgment, give the benefit of the doubt. Offer those who have hurt you second chances. Have patience. Micro mercies. Other individual acts of mercy may also include some of those that are adapted from a website called aletheia.org. It is a Christian website, and they offer a sum of the 56 ways to be merciful. I will not share all 56, rest assured. But they suggest things like do something kind or helpful for someone who you don't get along with or who has wronged you. That is mercy. Practically, carry with you, if you are economically able, some $5 gift cards that you might offer to someone who is homeless and asking for help. Put down your phone. Really listen to someone else, face to face. Dig out your most attractive note cards and handwrite an actual letter to someone as a means of demonstrating his or her importance to you. When someone has died, note 6 months after the passing, most people have stopped recognizing their grief, believing it is time limited. And we know from experience it is not. Remember. I think one of my absolute favorites in their list of 56 is perhaps one of the hardest for some of us to do. And it is three very simple words punctuated by periods. Hold your tongue. Stop, think before you respond, and then respond with overflowing love and exceptional radical kindness. Our Unitarian Universalist congregations, this one and many others, engage in collective works of mercy in our social action and social justice activities. Our national organization offers us many opportunities for mercy through our Standing on the Side of Love initiative. We see public acts of mercy in the world, although it is somewhat distressing that most of them rear their heads through acts of violence and harm toward others. There are too many examples to mention. But for me, one of the most amazingly beautiful and selfless mercies occurred in 2006, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. An Amish community reached out to the widow of the man who murdered 5 of their daughters in their school classroom. They reached out to her so she could be included in the circle of mourning and comfort. This is the mercy our world needs. This is the mercy our world is starving for. We know and we are saddened about the acts of gun and other weapon violence, terrorist actions, injustices towards refugees, immigrants, persons of color, LGBTQA persons, non-Christians, and those living in all types of poverty. As Unitarian Universalists, we are called by our principles and our faith to be agents of mercy. May we reclaim this word of reverence, put it into action as often and as lovingly as we are able. From The Shape of Mercy by Susan Meisner. I used to think that mercy meant showing kindness to someone who didn't deserve it, as if only the recipient defined the act. The girl in between has learned that mercy is defined by its giver. Our flaws are obvious, yet we are loved and able to love if we choose, because there is that bit of the divine still smoldering in us. Friends, as we leave in love today, take your spark of the divine out into a world that is starving for your mercy. For our mercy. Go in peace. Blessed be. Namaste.